Caitlin with Eversource. Very nice to call in on a very busy Friday morning. Caitlin, thank you. When I just added up New Hampshire and Maine, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you don't, that's not your market per se, but Central Power and Eversource, the largest utility provider here of electricity, more than 350,000 between the two, our listening region up into Portland. Caitlin, good morning with an update.
That's right. Hi, Jack. It's great to be here. And yeah, this storm was incredibly powerful, and we saw really extensive damage across the entire region.
And a lot of it I've noticed on this one, Caitlin, is just more tree damage, more trees down. Not we're not talking branches. I'm talking trees.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, a big factor here was that the ground was already saturated from the storm last week.
Right.
So when that wet cement snow stuck to the branches, the trees buckled under the weight of it, especially as those powerful winds started to whip across the state.
Yeah, well, you know, again, Caitlin, and what I said this morning, I'm just the messenger, you're the messenger, and you can tell folks best way to get an update. But when you see the headlines, multi-day restoration, is it just because with all these trees down, it's going to take that long for the crews to get in there and restore the power lines?
That's it. The nor'easter just stopped late last night. We were still taking damage to our system until 1 o'clock this morning. So the storm has moved out, which is the good news, and we have a massive, an army of crews who are continuing to come in to the state to help out. 2,200 line, tree, and service crews working on our system today, coming up from, we have Eversource crews from Massachusetts and Connecticut here, and also crews as far as Canada.
Yeah, and so I was just going to ask out of state, Caitlin, this is the question I know you don't. You probably ask this all the time, even from family and friends, Caitlin, with Eversource. If someone, for example, in Barrington, New Hampshire, is without power right now, I think there's more than 4,000 just in Barrington without power, is it hard to say when they're going to see power restored?
The challenge right now at this time in the restoration is, like I said, we were continuing to take damage up until 1 o'clock in the morning, so we really are in that damage assessment phase. But we, you know, we are looking to provide a global estimate for when we'll be substantially complete in our communities. We know our customers want to be able to make plans. And with those 2,200 line tree and service crews, we have a really good plan to get them to our hardest hit communities today. And our customers will see throughout the day really good progress. You'll see those numbers go down. And, you know, our customers have really been walloped by those two early spring storms in the last week. So we really are grateful for their patience and understanding as crews continue to work as quickly and safely as possible. Yesterday, the conditions were really challenging for crews. You mentioned those tree limbs weighed down by that heavy, wet snow and coming down as they were working. And the road conditions were, I know you've seen images from around the state, just really difficult, lots and lots of blocked roads. Our team has been working to replace 118 broken poles, and you know, clearing 287 blocked roads, more than 950 public safety issues that we've been working with our communities to respond to. So the damage has just been very, you know, very devastating. But we do have a massive contingent of crews working today, and they're continuing to arrive to the state to help.
Well, and thank them on behalf of all of us, because I know it's frustrating, but just think about the job they have. Let me ask you this, Caitlin, to replay this. So at some point today, once you do a better assessment, now that the storm's over and your folks can use technology and physical stuff, you're going to be posting more updated, realistic restoration estimates kind of thing today. And if people want to learn more, the best way is how?
Yeah, the best way to get updates on your individual power outage is to check our outage map. You can find estimates on the outage map for individual outages as we have estimated restoration times. You can also go to our website, eversource.com, and sign up for our two-way text option. So you can text us to report your outage and then get live updates on the restoration progress. And, of course, our customers should always be sure to report any power outages by calling us at 800-662-764 or online at eversource.com.
And, Caitlin, I know this goes without saying, because where I live, a tree went down sort of adjacent to us, one of our neighbors, a big tree, and the public works and fire folks were there quickly because it went right across some lines that were still down this morning. And, of course, they blocked off the street. Any down lines, people shouldn't mess with that. Any property owners, if you see a line and you're not sure if it's a cable, internet, phone, power, don't go near, don't touch that line, especially if you're standing on wet ground, correct?
Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that. It's such an important safety message, especially as we're continuing to work to clear blocked roads and make our communities safe. If you see down wires, stay far away and report them to 911. And if you're driving, never drive over down wires. Watch out for any debris that may be tangled up in them. Also, because this is a multi-day restoration, people will be using generators as a, you know, it's a great backup source, but you want to make sure you're using it safely. So make sure that you're using it outside your home, far from any, you know, far from any vents, and make sure it's installed by a licensed electrician, because there is the potential for a generator to backfeed onto the power lines while crews working and crews are working, and it's not safe for them.
All right. I thank you, Caitlin, so much. I appreciate it. And William and your team with Eversource, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. Kevin Landrigan, senior political reporter. Doesn't mean he's older. He's just wiser. New Hampshire leader joining us regular on Friday. Kevin, good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of an H, and nationally and up in the Maine, of course, and across the country streaming. Hey, Alexa, hey, Google, play the Pulse of an H. Kevin, good morning. Kevin, good morning.
Hey, Jack.
Hey, I got a question before I get back to... Governor Sununu was on yesterday talking about the nor'easter and the power stuff and everything else, but
sure.
I asked him about one piece of legislation at the end. Before I do, I just got to ask you this question, Kevin, because one of our listeners sent me something from a local Lexington, Massachusetts news about the town wants to become the first in Massachusetts, basically ban all natural gas, fossil fuels, propane for your Weber grill, your leaf blower, you know, no gas fireplace, no stove going forward. Can you imagine New Hampshire ever doing that? Do you think that day will ever come in the next few years or not? I'm just curious.
No, I don't think so. I mean, this isn't Monterey, California, right? I mean, it's just...
No, it's Lexington, Massachusetts.
Right, and that's, you know, it's a pretty Tony town down there in a very blue state, so I'm not surprised there are communities in Massachusetts talking about extreme climate change articles, you know, because that's where the politics is today, right? I mean, it's so extreme right, extreme left, everyone sort of trying to push the envelope, right? But especially in a state like New Hampshire, where, I mean, we're at the end of the pipeline, as you know, Jack. We have among the highest energy prices in America right now.
I know.
So to talk about taking anything off the table in terms of our options, you know, it's also one of the reasons why, by the way, you know, electric car legislation here in Concord has not really done well. And we're not in a high-speed lane when it comes to access to EVs here in New Hampshire. Compared to a number of other states, we're very slowly rolling out this infrastructure for EVs. And one of the reasons is because they're not catching on with a lot of New Hampshire auto buyers, right? Because of the price, because of the issues with the batteries, because of any number of things, you know, it's sort of why we're, I think.
Well, I'm just waiting for the day. I'm telling you, could come if you have a little hunting camp in Aldine, New Hampshire, and you make an outside fire, you might see the climate police coming up saying, "Sir, no fires out here," even if you are hunting deer legally. Hey, Kevin, let's switch gears.
Sure.
Governor Sununu yesterday, I was surprised by this story. It didn't make much news this week with all the side stuff and the total eclipse coming up Monday. We'll talk about that in the 10 o'clock hour. By the way, coming up, a pair of Luke Bryan tickets, just a little hint, 9:50. Kevin, so after the governor's talking about the eclipse and power outages and the nor'easter yesterday, I asked him, I was surprised, if the House wants to legalize marijuana in New Hampshire, because the main goal would be to get it legalized for recreational use, then you can tweak with stuff later. Why would the House Finance Committee totally blow off what the governor said he needed for a few prerequisites on, like, number of locations, you know, control, just making sure, some of the things he didn't like, if they expect him to not veto it? Why would they pass it and ignore? Because it seems like the governor said yesterday he won't sign it now as it is. It could be a deal breaker even in the Senate that they didn't make changes in the House Finance. What's going on there? Because I don't know.
Well, no, it's you kind of – explaining why we've been debating this thing for 20 years and it never gets done. Because every time, it's like Lucy with the football, every time in the legislature we get close to consensus on this issue, another constituency pops up and says, well, no, I don't want it that way, I want it this way. And in the case, what's happening right now, it's really all about the fight really is all about who controls the sale of recreational marijuana at the outset. And this governor, the state liquor commission, and the state senate majority want it to be the liquor commission to be the franchisor, to issue franchises to 15 businesses to sell marijuana. Now, the House, which is very much more libertarian, as you know, than the Senate is, which is kind of more moderate Republican, more mainstream Republican. There's a very big libertarian force in the House that has a lot to do with what passes and what can't pass. That group is extremely very pro-free enterprise, and they want this proposal that would essentially create agency stores where the liquor commission would authorize these stores to sell marijuana and then basically step away, which is to say the commission would have no control over marketing of those products. They wouldn't have any real control over pricing of those products. I mean, that's the other thing the governor wants. By having a franchise, you can kind of prevent market manipulation. In other words, you can prevent a large major marijuana company coming in here and undercutting the price of everyone else so that they can't do business, which we've seen in some states, which have kind of cannibalized the marijuana market. So you end up with 400 stores opening in the first year and 200 of them closing in 6 months, you know. And he wants to avoid that and thinks more state oversight of pricing would be able to do that. That's a proposal the House majority right now won't pass. So we're going to have to go through this dance. The House is going to pass their proposal next week, and then it's going to go to the Senate, and it's really up to folks like Daryl Abbas, Tim Lang, Republicans who support legalizing marijuana, but not this way. So what do you do if you're those folks? Do you just say the House is out in left field, we're just not going to get this done, or do you stick your amendment on their bill? And if you do, you send it back to them, and then we end up with a conference committee, and we try and work this thing out. Right now, it's unclear whether the Senate's going to be willing to do that. Right now, as you could tell from the governor's comments yesterday, they're a little pushed out of joint, meaning they went, in their view, they went the extra mile, went to the House and said, hey, you want this thing to happen? Here's how it can happen.
Yeah, it just
and the House, by a bipartisan, you know, 19-6 vote, said, yeah. No, we're not doing it that way.
Now, Kevin, walk me through this, right? Because it's a big deal to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It just seems to, it's a big deal to a lot of people. Walk me through this. It just seems to me that if the House wanted it to pass, it seemed like it had a real chance this time, even in the Senate, even though Jeb Bradley and Lou, Senator Lou, are not in favor.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor Sununu, he can let it become, he can assign it, veto it, or let it become law without a signature. But yesterday he said he wouldn't support it as is. Now, if he vetoes it, can they survive an override? I don't think so. Right?
No,
yeah.
No.
So why would they? Why would they not make the changes?
Particularly in the Senate, you're not. In other words, you're not going to override anything in the Senate because
right. Why, but why would
there's
they
like
not
nine or ten
it?
People in the Senate that won't vote at all for it. So
but why would they? Why would they hold their guns if they want it to pass?
So, like I said, it's really a philosophical debate, right? Which okay. is how do you want this thing to roll out? I mean, the supporters. The constituency groups that many of which want this to happen are trying to urge the House to be reasonable, which is to say, to realize that whatever you pass, we're going to be back here tweaking it in the future. And this thing is legalizing marijuana. Once you make it legal, it's at least a year away from actually selling the product in stores.
Yeah.
So you can... What's wrong with creating a template that can pass, the governor can sign, and a year from now, if we find, you know what, hey, that's really not going to work well, we ought to go back to this model, then you could do that.
Put in another bill. All right, Kevin, we have to run. Do you have power?
Yes, I do. We're all good.
All right, thanks, Kevin Landigan, New Hampshire leader.
Enjoy the eclipse.
Yeah, total eclipse. Wasn't that a song?
All right. What?
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. I did not realize he was going to be on this hour, but John's traveling. He's busy going to Baltimore with the president to look at that collapsed bridge and the whole situation there. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Jack. Yeah, it's going to be a busy afternoon for the president today. He'll get an aerial view of the damage associated with the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge and also a view of the port of Baltimore, which remains closed. For the time being, the hope is to get it up and running by the end of May. The president will also pledge that the federal government will commit the funds necessary to rebuild that bridge, to reopen that port, and will also meet with the families who lost loved ones. Six individuals tragically lost their lives with the collapse of that bridge less than 2 weeks ago.
John, I appreciate it. Getting working you in, and you have a safe trip there.
Thank you so much, Jack. Sorry. We couldn't speak a little earlier. Have a great weekend.
John Decker, our own White House correspondent. It's a little busy on Air Force One, however they're traveling there. And our next guest is a huge, when I say he's a huge, he's a gigantic country music fan, originally from South Carolina, Michael Graham, editor-in-chief, New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com, with some political updates this morning. Good morning, Michael.
I want to talk about your energy story, Jack, because you are on something. I got everybody who was annoyed by losing their power yesterday, and I was one of them. Get used to it. The new ISO New England report that came out about 2 weeks ago that we reported on at NHJournal.com says, quote, the push to eliminate carbon emissions is driving the electrification of heating and transportation sectors just as the grid is incorporating huge amounts of intermittent weather-dependent resources. Now, that's ISO speak for the Biden administration is using regulation to make you heat your home with electricity and to drive a car running electricity at the same time that they're shutting down things like the or creating policies that shut down things like the Meramec station, like other, you know, carbon-based, what they call baseload power. So they want to push you to wind and solar, which are – they may be wonderful. They certainly have their place, but they are not reliable.
At the same time
that they're pushing you to heat your home and drive a car powered by electricity. That's from ISO New England.
Michael, I have to ask you this, and I'd even put Mara Healey in this category, the governor of Massachusetts. If I asked, and I'd be respectful and polite because that's how I was raised, if I asked President Biden, I've interviewed him several times over the years, but seriously today, I want you to be serious and put yourself in his head for a minute. If I said, Mr. President, I know you're pushing a lot of stuff, electricity, electric vehicles. When it comes to electricity, Mr. President, yeah, I love that, love that. What is the power source to make electricity? What do you think he would answer?
So the answer is always going to be wind and solar.
No. How do you make electricity for people's homes? 9 out of 10 of them, natural gas.
What do you mean now?
Now, do you think they know?
See, they don't care about now. They don't, Jack. It's not about now. It is about making new change. So, for example, electricity in South Carolina, where I grew up, super cheap, and we loved it for AC because electricity is great for making air conditioning. But electricity stinks at making heat, which is why we had cheap electric baseboard heaters because it never got below, you know, 40 degrees hardly down there. But you come to, you know, to Berlin, New Hampshire,
yeah,
and it's a cyclone bomb or bomb cyclone or whatever, and you want to try to use a heat pump, you can forget about it. It takes a ton of electricity. Mm-hmm. And it's not very efficient. And by the way, Jack, as we reported on NHJournal.com, we had that, whatever it was called, cyclone thing in 2021 when the temperatures plunged.
Yep.
We were getting 17% of our power from burning oil because all of the other sources couldn't keep up. And everyone says, Jack, well, don't worry. Quebec will do it. Hydro will do it. Guess who doesn't have enough power right now because of the drought that they're having in Quebec? It's mm-hmm. Quebec. They're having to import power from other regions, so they're not going to be reliable either. There are reliable sources like natural gas, and unfortunately, because of Biden administration policies supported by Senator Hassan and Senator Shaheen, we can't get the natural gas, so we don't want to burn the natural gas because we don't have a reliable supply for it, which means we're on the grid with everybody else.
So in Lexington, Mass., they want to basically not allow you to use propane for your Weber grill. What's wrong? A lot of people have hunting in second homes or homes in New Hampshire. They use propane to heat their home. What's wrong with propane?
Evil. It emits carbon, and so you must have a solar-powered hunting, you know, stand, deer stands. You have to. And I would just urge people, you know, I don't try to hump this website too much.
This is just insanity.
You go to NHL.com, Green Energy Agenda puts New Hampshire grid at risk. The whole piece is linked to reports and quotes from not the energy companies, it's not the oil companies. It's from people who run these grids going, holy crap, we don't have enough power.
Every time I think about selling our place in Florida, I'm like, I may move there at this rate. This is insanity. It's absolute insanity when I look at what's happening in Massachusetts.
What's insanity, Jack, is that there is a, quote, trans athlete in Lynn, Mass, who is 6 feet tall, has a full beard, identifies as a girl, and injured 3 girls in a single basketball game earlier this year. Now a report just broke in the last couple of days that this trans woman, as the person calls themselves, was in a ladies' locker room with his fellow girls talking about their breastular areas and had to be removed. And all of this is happening as the state Senate here in New Hampshire today considers a bill that says if you are not a biological female, you cannot play on an all-girls team. Every Democrat, Jack, is going to vote against it. Every single one is going to vote to let the bearded guy, individual, play on the girls' team.
Inclusivity. Hey, what else do you have, Michael? It looks like the 2nd District Burns. You had it on Wednesday, I think, New Hampshire Journal, NHJournal.com. Burns not running in the 2nd District. It looks like Dr. Vikram Manchuramani, Lily Tang Williams, and, of course, a couple Democrats. Can be an interesting race. But you and I have talked about this.
I'm curious to see if a truly MAGA candidate gets into that race now that Bob Burns isn't running. That's where the energy in the New Hampshire Party is right now. And so we'll see. It's a tough district. It's, you know, every Republican is a long shot there. It rarely votes Republican. But I would be surprised. You know, Vikram Manchuramani, smart guy. Obviously, he, you know, taught at Harvard, et cetera. He's an entrepreneur. And you can see the appeal there. Lily Tang Williams, very vociferous and forceful on the issues of individual liberty and what she saw growing up in China. She doesn't want to come here.
Yep.
So we'll see. But that leaves a lane open for a Trump person. And then on the Democratic side, Jack, we may actually have something that I've never seen in the 5 years now that I've been doing this, an actual primary in the Democratic Party based on ideas. You're going to have Becky Whitley, who's a true progressive. You're going to have Colin Van Ostrand, who's a traditional New Hampshire liberal. And they're actually going to disagree on stuff. And that would be fascinating because on the governor's side, Jack, as you've noticed, Cindy Warmington and Joyce Craig, you could swap the heads on those two when it comes to actual ideas and policies. They agree on basically everything. It's just a race on personality and other stuff like that. But Becky Whitley is a real true believer. She will yell at you if you use pronouns. She says illegal alien is hate speech, and she's going to make that race a lot of fun to watch.
Michael Graham, NHJournal.com. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Hey, only because I went a little long there, and we had Michael Graham. I don't want to hold the great Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio, national correspondent, live. Good Morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of an H. Talking about the British invasion. We're not talking the Beatles.
Nope. Unlike the Beatles, they're invading our white-collar careers. This is an incredible trend, Jack. We are seeing surging wages and staff shortages in the U.S. They're incentivizing a lot of companies to look across the pond, and I'll give you an example why. It all comes down to the numbers. If you are a back-end software developer, you will earn about $130,000 here in the U.S., pretty good salary. If you have that very same job in the U.K., $66,000. If you own the company, you're going to go with the developer in the UK. It's better for your bottom line. There's also tax incentives. We're seeing finance, accounting, marketing, many sectors move and look across the pond for talent. Also, they're offering tax incentives. And the reason for this is that ever since Brexit in 2016, they had seen the pound sink in terms of value. It's lost 15% against the dollar. And then you have a loss of productivity, a loss of job growth. This is one like beacon of hope that they're now able to sell to a much bigger market, us, the U.S., and it's working.
There you go. Aaron, I'm going to let you go early. As they say, you're dismissed from class. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Aaron.
Friday,
you're right. Total Eclipse coming on Monday. Thank you, Aaron. So I want to bring in Jason and Celeste. Jason and Celeste Brodnick, they are the owners of Little Giant Comics, and they're organizing an old school comic show at the Everett Arena in Concord. Not this weekend, but coming up. Tradition like none other. The Masters coming up as well. April 13th, Saturday. Jason and Celeste, thanks for being in our studios. Jason and Celeste?
Yeah, can you hear?
I can. How about you, CJ?
Okay.
Thank you for having us.
Sorry. CJ is a Philadelphia Eagle fan. Don't get mad at him.
Oh, I love that. I grew up
in listen. Tell CJ we're hearing him, but that's okay. tell us, I said earlier, Jason and Celeste, that I think what's missing today is the ability to laugh. I love the old comic books. I love comedies. I love to laugh. We don't laugh enough today. Tell us about your show coming up.
Man, this show, it's built on pure passion for comics. You know, I'm a comic collector, and long time ago, I had a medical incident where I had a stent put in my heart, and the outlook was bleak, and my wife took me to a yard sale event at the Everett Arena. And it was just serendipitous. I walked in, it was like the horns of Valhalla blowing, and I put my name in. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, I get a call, and we started the show. So long story short, the show it's pure comic books. It's, you know, as a comic book fan, I used to go to comic book shows for comics, and I used to have to navigate through a cosplay parade or a gang of pirates that wanted to greet me with a mug of root beer. And, you know, there was the Geico truck, there was the brownie lady and the beef jerky guy. And it just was, to me, it wasn't a comic book show. It was more like a county fair.
Yep.
You know
yep.
what I mean? And there were craftsmen. And
yep. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. I love those things. But for me, as a comic book collector, I needed something that appealed to me as a comic book collector. Mm-hmm. So what we put together, we contacted the best vendors in the industry all across the country, and we put together a one-day show, literally with the best vendors in the hobby, some of the best artists in the industry. And we have 20,000 square feet of nothing but comic books and comic book art.
I love it.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I love it.
Yeah,
it's
10 next weekend.
Yep.
The VIPs get in at 9, which we're giving away some VIP tickets through one of the channels here. And general admission comes in at 10. It's only $15 to get in. It's free parking. And like I said, it's the best vendors in the hobby. We have Hake's Auction House, which has been around since 1967.
Mm-hmm.
Heritage Auction House was just sold that $6 million comic.
Wow. Well, I want to talk about some of this.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hold on. We're giving away, because we're on a network of news talk stations, Jason, we're giving away VIP tickets at our main website, thepulseofnh.com, because we're on several stations. Is Celeste with you, Jason?
She is.
I am.
Okay, Celeste, I got to bring you in here, okay?
Okay.
We need the heat. I have to be honest. I have to be honest with Jason. I've never met him, but he sounds like someone I could talk to a while. But as former news director, and I ran WMUR for a lot of years on the news side, I can recognize talent. Celeste, he's got this voice thing going on, something between like a country singer and an actor. Is he, am I the only one who says that, Celeste? Is it hard to live with him? Do you agree with me when he starts going? He sounds like I'm somewhere between Kevin Costner. No, I don't know. He sounds like he's about Luke Bryant. We just gave CJ. Who's our winner, by the way, CJ?
Our winner is Tim Mokin from Tilton.
All right, Tim from Tilton going to Luke. Celeste.
Yes.
What's going on with Jason? What's his voicing? He sounds like he'd do his own show.
Well, you know, he was born in Chattanooga, Tennessee, grew up in Philadelphia, and then I made him move up here.
So I picked up a little bit of everywhere I went.
You got it. I'm telling you, I can see. You got it, Jay. You got a show. And by the way, I'm in a generous mood this morning, so I want to talk about that $6 million comic, your show again. We got plenty of time. Here's a fun thing. I don't know if you heard my commentary when you get into the studio, but I'm like that insurance company. I've seen a few things. And I come at my show with common sense. And I respect we have
Love
Democrats,
it.
Republicans, but everything's so politicized today.
Love yes. it.
We don't laugh enough in our society.
It's the truth.
And I was talking about some of the shows I grew up with. Now, I'm not saying they didn't push the envelope. Norman Lear was some of the. But we don't laugh enough. I don't know about you. I'm not a medical expert. You mentioned, and I hope you're feeling well, that stent procedure. I got to tell you, I love dogs, too. I'm an animal person. I bet you your blood pressure drops if you have a good laugh with a buddy. Like, say you're out fishing. Say you're out fishing or playing golf. And by the way, I'm a prankster of jokes, and my buddies will tell you that. I have buddies that while I'm teeing up, you're about to hit, they'll say something, and, you know, they're just trying to mess with you.
See,
we
that's
laugh.
How it should be, though.
We laugh, but we don't laugh enough. Everything's so damn serious and uptight in our society. Do you agree with me?
I agree with you 100%. 100%. And if you came to my show, you'd have nothing but laughs. We're all about fun. We have
it.
Such a good time. You know, community is such an overused word in this industry. But the sense of community at this show is amazing.
So I could. Here's my offer, and I don't want to forget it, because CJ, you're a witness, and Celeste. I would love, Jason, once a month, we'll find a time that works for you to call into my show, because we're on a bunch of stations, and now that we're streaming across the country, so we're up in the Portland. And just you pick the topic. You might say, hey, Jack, came across this old comic book or story. Just call in. I'd love to keep the presence and the personality going, because we do need to laugh a little more. So let's come back to the industry. I'll follow up with you. Let's go back to that. Some of these comic books, and I used to have some in my a box, they can be pretty darn valuable.
They can be incredibly expensive. One just sold at auction yesterday for $6 million.
Which one was that?
First appearance of Superman. It was Action Comics number one.
Oh, my goodness. And I had some Superman comic books.
Yeah, Action Comics number one. This was a graded 8.5.
$6 million?
$6 million, man.
Oh, my goodness.
$6 million.
What's your favorite on the old stuff? And we'll talk about your show in a moment coming up at the Everett. What's your, what do you, when you see something, you'll recognize it, Celeste and Jason. But what are the old comic books that you love? You mentioned Superman. Give us some others.
Superman's a good one, but my love is, it's a character called Rom the Space Knight. Not a lot of people know about him, but it was a 75-issue series, started in 79, and it was the first comic I read was Rom number 18. Remember the cover, the story, everything.
I found
the comic book in an alleyway, actually. And I read it, and I loved it. And I had to find out what happened in the story, so I went to a comic book store that I found in the phone book. You know, this was 1982, maybe? 81. But, yeah, Rom the Space Knight. That's it.
You know, I remember you mentioned the stores. I remember growing up, although I never did, but it's funny, earlier, a buddy of mine from high school, I grew up on the North Shore of Boston, and in Swampscott and Marblehead downtown, there used to be, I think they called it the comic book shop, and you'd go in, you get a soda if you want or some snacks, but it was just all comic books, but they were current, like they came out, whatever was hot, you know?
Every Wednesday, it's new comic book day. I go every Wednesday and I get my books. I still read every week. Still collect it, yeah, all the time. My collection's huge. I probably have close to 1 million books in the collection.
Where does he put all that stuff, Celeste?
It's a little challenging.
Where don't I put all that stuff?
Now, Celeste, are you as into this stuff as him?
Not as much, but I grew up not really reading comics as much, but watching the cartoons.
Don't let her fool you. She's pot committed.
And by the way, she mentioned the cartoons. You know how profound some of this stuff is? Because if you look at laughter and comics, you know, comedy, one of mine growing up, of course, I was a little bit different. I used to watch professional wrestling, roller derby before my sporting practices.
Oh, hell yeah.
But on comics, remember the Jetsons, George Jetson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you think about that for a minute, and his dog Rat-Row and Spacely Sprockets, that cartoon.
Meet George Jetson.
Yeah, yeah. That cartoon forecast the future.
Oh,
it did. Hover vehicles, you'd come in, they had microwave ovens and no one knew what they were. The whole unit of their home was like computer driven and
I think the Simpsons got them beat on predictions predictions though.
All right, good stuff. Let's before we go to a break, tell us the who, what, when, where coming up, not this week and next. Tell us the who, what, where, tickets, the whole thing.
Old School Comic Show next Saturday, April 13th. VIPs get in at 9. General admission comes at 10. General admission is $15. Parking is free. We have the creator of Venom, David Michelinie, the guy that created Carnage. Mark Bagley is there. Sam De La Rosa, who did Venom, Lethal Protector. We have Jim Steranko, who's just an absolute legend. We have Jim Shooter, who created Marvel Secret Wars and the Black Suit Spider-Man. We have Mike Royer, who worked with Jack Kirby. Absolute legends in the industry that I'm flying in from all over the country.
Awesome.
And then we have the vendors, the biggest vendors in the industry, Heritage Auction House, Absolute Comics and Statues, Zap, Reese Brothers. If you're a comic collector, you know those names. They're huge. And it's going to be 20,000 square feet of nothing but comic books and original comic book art and artist.
Yeah,
it's amazing. The VIPs get in at 9. We put out 150-foot of red carpet. You get we have a VIP concierge, so you come and check in with the concierge.
Awesome.
You get your VIP swag bag, which is loaded with prizes and goodies and freebies. And you walk the 150 feet of red carpet to a private entrance where you get the full run of the arena from 9 to 10.
See what I mean, Celeste? I mean, who doesn't want to be there with him going like this?
That's so true.
So here's the deal. Thank you both. Have a great show. We got the Nor'easter out of the way for you yesterday, so you don't have to deal with that.
Good
Fantastic.
Stuff.
Enjoy it. Where's your main your main shop?
We have a shop in Lawrence, Massachusetts at 15 Union Street next to the Canal Street Antique Mall. It's a 5,000-square-foot mill space with the huge ceilings, exposed brick walls.
You must have a pretty big online presence, too, right? What's the website?
Not yet. The website is littlegiantcomics.com. Very simple.
I just went on. I saw it because it mentioned your move.
Yep.
Hey, you both are awesome. You rock. Have fun. Have fun. And I'll, Celeste and Jason, I'll follow up with Jason through DK or whoever on our team.
Yeah, that'd be great.
To get your contact, get through the show. But I'd love to bring you on a little more when you have something that's fun, interesting.
Oh, man.
Have you call in. We'll keep it up once a month. It'll be fun to make people laugh.
It sounds like a good time. You're going to be sorry you asked for that, but I'm coming with heat.
No. I'd love to. I love anything that helps the show. I'm not that bright, but anything that helps my show, I know how to take advantage of it. Thank you.
Love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Rory O'Neill, tensions in the Middle East.
Yeah, they certainly are. You know, for 6 months now, it's been 6 months since the October 7th attack. We've been trying to prevent this from becoming a regional conflict, trying to keep it just between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. But as you referenced, this strike by Israel into Damascus, Syria, targeting a complex of the Iranian consulate, took out 13 people, some of them top operatives in the Iranian military who funnel funds and weapons to Hezbollah, which are then used to attack Israel. So Israel made the strike after those valuable targets, but bracing now for repercussions and a response.
Yeah, I think this is more tenuous than people realize. Thank you, Rory. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jack.
Cody with Goodyear with an update. Even though people are digging out and want power back, April's a great time to get a new or used boat from Goodyear Boat Company.
April is one of our busiest months, and I don't know. I'm thinking that the snow and the weather is just giving us all a little bit more cabin fever, maybe, and some more incentive to get out there on the water soon.
Well, there you go. Why not, right? We're all yearning for it. But seriously, I was on your site. Great new and used deals going on right now. And, of course, now's the time because you can get things going by Memorial Day, right?
Yeah, for sure. Most of the manufacturers have kind of extended all of the boat show discounts and rebates and those types of things. So, this time of year, heading into, call it mid-April through the end of May is when we typically have our highest levels of inventory. So best selections for sure right now, and pretty much inventory in every different boat manufacturer, whether it's Cobalt, Chaparral, Boston Whaler, Mastercraft, Sylvan Pontoons, Premier Pontoons. So just about anything.
Well, one thing I learned, I'm looking forward to being on Fridays doing our marina shows, our marina tour again at your great locations, but you do a lot more with some of the what I'd call sport fishing boats or Boston Whalers than I realize, but you also do a ton of stuff like an Ossipee where it might be more of a setting for those great, great, comfortable pontoon boats.
Yeah, we were actually just down, and we had talked about it a little bit on your show. We're at the Great Northeast Boat Show a couple of weeks ago in Bedford, New Hampshire, at the Sportsplex there, and that's kind of known as more of a pontoon boat show. A lot of pontoons on display from all different manufacturers. And wow, we haven't seen pontoon sales like that in a really long time. So I think the national trend that New Hampshire has been a little bit behind is really just the volume of pontoons out there because they're super comfortable. I mean, all the great things that people love them for. You can still tow water skis or a tube or something, and you can get lots of horsepower on there now. But, yeah, they're really comfortable, for sure.
You know, one thing we should do just while we have you is run through the locations regionally, because you span, like our audience, right up into Maine now.
Yeah, Sebago Lake in Raymond, formerly Panther Run Marina. So that's a Cobalt dealership there, and Premier Pontoons, Mastercraft surf boats. But then in our flagship store and our oldest store, the historic Goodhue and Hawkins Navy Yard that's in Wolfboro. You've been there many times. And across the lake in Meredith, we have Chaparral and Boston Whaler and Mastercraft there, Sylvan Pontoons. It's a beautiful, you know, great location right next to the town docks at the Lovejoy area in Meredith. Sunapee, you know, is a great spot. We mostly do boat rentals there, but, you know, folks, you know, find us and connect with us on new and used boats over in Sunapee as well. And then Ossipee Lake, speaking of pontoons, Ossipee Lake is, you know, about 80% pontoons on that lake. They just lend themselves really well for the sandbars and that type of thing.
You have a great location, tuck in there. Hey, before I let you go, is there room still? And just tell us about the club. If you're not going to buy a new or used boat and you want to take advantage of boating and not deal with a lot of the headaches or the hauling, and you're pretty much national on this, is there still room or opportunities with the boat club?
There are memberships available for sure. We have a promotion going on right now, which is $2,500 off the initiation fee to join our boat club. So cruise over to goodhueboat.com and pick up some boat club information. Send us a text or an email. We'd love to, you know, give you all the details about boat club. We find that it's about, you know, 20% to 30% the cost of actually owning your own boat, but you get to drive boats all over the lakes region, different types, and really all over the world. So it's a cool program.
I appreciate it, Cody. You have a great weekend. Goodhueboat.com, goodhueboat.com. Enjoy the eclipse.
Take care.